Episodes in accordance for the wheelchair audience. You don't want to miss any audio clips, cause we're providing information, tips and some tricks for every state and every nation. Someone can benefit, like, what's the best fabric? Should I get the tiger's yellow carbon fiber palette?
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Wheelchair Nerds. This is episode 2 of season 2. It is, good gracious, it is still winter. Just after Valentine's Day, we're recording this here on President's Day, February 19th, 2024. People always talk about how the month of January seems to drone on forever. I agree with you, but it's like we hit February and now I can't believe it's February 19th, almost the end of February. It is crazy how time seems to work. With that said, when we think about March, I don't know about you guys, but I think about the start of the Abilities Expo season. And as we were planning our podcast season for this year, had an opportunity where an opening popped up and we thought to ourselves, this would be a great opportunity for us to reach out to some folks at the Abilities Expo. Maybe expose you guys to the Abilities Expos. Hopefully not. Hopefully you've heard of this great events that they put on multiple times throughout the country. But I think it'd be neat for us to do a deep dive into the Abilities Expos. Where did they come from? What are their plans? How do they think of people to have at the Abilities Expos and whatnot? So we actually have one of the folks who has been known and tied to the Abilities Expos for a number of years. I'm going to let him give his whole history on that. But we have Lou joining us today. So Lou, with that said, tell me a little bit about you. If someone was to meet you for the first time, give me like your 30-second elevator pitch. You're Lou, and what do you do?
Okay, Angie. Well, thanks a lot for asking me, because Permobil's been great for us, and we've been with Abilities Expo for 15 years. My business partner, David Carson, and I bought the product from Questex 15 years ago. We're going into our 16th year. Abilities Expo was started 45 years ago by Pat and Dick Wooten. Dick had polio. He was in a wheelchair. He found, living in San Diego, he found that he had problems going out and finding the products and the services that he needed. He and his wife decided to put together a show, One Stop Shopping, and that was in 1979. Abilities Expo was then sold to another company, which was part of a portfolio, then sold again, then sold again. And we bought it from, I think, the fourth owner, Questex, in 2008. And it had a history of its ups and downs. Unfortunately, Questex, or the previous owners, was so intent on profit on every single show that they would go to a city. If they didn't make a profit or they broke even, they wouldn't go back. David and I took a different approach. We said, we're going to give a city 4 to 5 years. If we can't get the amount of attendance that we want, if we can't get the number of exhibitors to support it, we will have given it a big chance. And that happened. It happened in Atlanta, happened in D.C., because we really couldn't get a venue. The Washington Convention Center is somewhat inaccessible because of all the stairs. Parking is impossible. And if you want to park, it's $75 in Trump Tower across the street. So we decided to go out to Chantilly. Nobody came. No public transportation. We had problems. We've given Abilities Expo the chance in cities that were most requested. We still get people who say, why aren't you in Seattle, San Antonio, Denver, Indianapolis, etc.? And we can only launch so many shows a year. When we launch a show, what we look for is population, because one out of every 5 people or 6 people in the United States has a disability. They're touched by another 1 or 2 people. So that says that 50% of the population are touched by somebody with a disability. So if we launch a new show, we're looking for population, because the numbers just work out. So that's a brief history of Abilities Expo. We now do 7 shows a year. We're going to go back to Canada. We had a licensee.
I get that question a lot.
Yeah. So awesome. We're going to go back to either Mississauga or Toronto. We're looking at venues right now. That'll be in 25.
Oh, very good. Yeah. So the way Permobil works is we call ourselves, our region is Permobil Americas. And so we incorporate everybody in North America. And I will say our Canadian friends and counterparts up there have asked, like, when is the Abilities Expo coming back? Because there's no consumer shows up there. So that's awesome. So thank you for that history. I have to ask, it's on a curious personal note. All of our listeners know that I have a cousin with cerebral palsy. That's kind of how I always say I got into CRT long, long, long time ago, back in the 80s when I was a kiddo. And, you know, I'm just curious, you know, I know you mentioned you and David as business partners looking at this, but I guess Lou as the individual, what made you say, yeah, I think Abilities Expo is something I'd like to invest in?
Good question. So I'm going to give you my history. I've been in advocacy for 110 years. It started when I was in college. I went to Ohio Wesleyan University. I was in the only interracial fraternity in the country. This is in 1955. So advocacy was part of my background. I was the largest producer of diversity career fairs starting in 1984 right through 2008. We did 40 shows a year, 40 career fairs, and we were in an impossible marketplace. We were looking for African-American women engineers who graduated from MIT with master's degrees in physics, primarily for defense contractors who at that time had affirmative action programs. So I was a member of the board of the NAACP for 20 years. And then when David and I saw Abilities, because Questex wanted to divest, I looked at it and I said, David, this is two things. Number one, it's advocacy, underserved community. It's what I've done all my life. And the second thing is it's cookie cutter. If we do this in Los Angeles, we can do it in New York, we can do it in Chicago, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Advocacy is a great part of my life. Advocacy is what was interesting to me. And we've been able to do that with Abilities Expo. There's a lot of advocacy in our show. We bring in all the associations so that they can have outreach and find new members or bring people in. Somebody who has CP who didn't know that there was a National Association for Cerebral Palsy, find somebody at our show and they get the types of information that they can't get anyplace else. That's really what I do.
That was what drew you to the Abilities Expo. That's really cool to hear. So another question I have is, this is a podcast that primarily hits folks that either utilize, prescribe, or provide complex rehab technology. With that said, what are some of the disabilities that you guys try to reach? Because I know it goes beyond folks with CRT. So what are some of the diagnosis groups or the advocacy groups specifically that people might have a chance to interact with at an Abilities Expo?
Sure. We work with Christopher Reeves. We work with United Spinal. We work with Paralyzed Vets. Depending on where we are in terms of, because a lot of the associations are volunteer associations, so we try and get every known disease association that we can to come to the show, MS, MD, CP. So we work with a lot of different associations. In any one show, in our LA show, a New York show, we will have somewhere around 15 or 16, what we call organizational sponsors, who then reach out to their communities. We have communities for autism. Again, we want to bring people who have autistic children or needs to find either membership or information about autism. They come to the show. So we like to bring in as many of the different types of disabilities as we can. We don't necessarily get a lot of people who either have hearing impairments or visual impairments, only because when we go to vendors, the vendors say, what percentage of your audience are visually impaired or blind or hearing impaired or deaf? And the problem we have is we don't promote as much to that community only because we don't have the vendors. So if somebody comes to our show and they're looking for the vendor and they're not there, they're disappointed. We don't want that to happen. When we were in Boston, we worked with the Perkins School. They were very good. So then we could go out and we could promote to people who had visual impairments or were blind, and they'd bring them in. Mm-hmm. We don't have that in every community that we work with.
That makes sense. I think it's important for people, our listeners, to understand that due to the different geography, the different resources, you talked a little bit about what happened here in DC, the DC metro area. Our listeners know I live right outside DC, worked at a pediatric hospital in DC for 12 years, now don't have to commute through that traffic. I remember the Abilities Expo, the very first one. This would have been probably before you guys actually owned them, because this was in the early 2000s. I remember it came once and then disappeared. It was actually before the Dulles Expo Center was created. And then when y'all came back to the Dulles Expo Center, was excited. And then when I attended that as working for a manufacturer, I was like, man, there's nobody here. And it wasn't that there was nobody there, but it was very poorly attended. I started listening and paying better attention. And I started thinking to myself, well, this was silly. Why does the Dulles Expo Center not have metro access? So it had nothing to do with the Abilities Expo. It had to do with the lack of accessibility of the DC metro area. So I think sometimes people don't necessarily have an appreciation for all that has to go in when considering a location. You mentioned population is a big thing. Transportation is a big thing. Currently, the model is 7 a year. How often do you guys mix it up? Because I know, you know, there are some that are mainstays. We know New York, LA, and Chicago are three of the mainstays that are three of the biggest. But how do you determine the other, what makes up the other four?
That's a good question, because, again, we want to be geographically as well located as we can around the United States. So we're not really in the Northeast other than New Jersey. We had to drop out of Boston. One of the other problems that we run into is that we're a consumer show. The convention and visitors bureaus are very concerned about heads and beds. Mm-hmm. As a consumer show, we don't bring in thousands of people to take hotel rooms. So if we don't take hotel rooms, the hotel taxes, which pay for the CVB, don't pay for the CVB if they're not there. Mm-hmm. Venues are very important, but not only that, but it's dates. For instance, in LA, primarily LA, Fort Lauderdale, any of the big convention centers, they won't give us dates until 12 months before the next show. So we just got our dates for LA for 25. Mm-hmm. We don't have dates for 26, 27, 28. And our dates can change by a month either way. When you're doing seven shows, if your dates change from month to month and they pack into a specific time frame, it doesn't give us enough time to sell the show. So venues, dates are very important. And then it's a question of the manufacturers or the dealers being there. For instance, Permobil does seven shows with us this year. If I did 10 shows, Permobil would say, well, wait a second, we can do seven, but an additional three shows, that's going to impact our ability to do the national ISS, whatever the other shows are, because Permobil has other shows that they have to go to, because they're associations and they work with those associations. So it's a combination of different things that allow us to launch a show in a different area. It's population, it's venue, availability of dates, accessibility, and hotels. That's another thing. When we go to a place, we want to make sure that there's enough accessible rooms so that somebody can get to the convention center. So all of those taken into account allow us to say, okay, we're going to launch in whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, I remember I was working up at the New York Abilities Expo metro area up in New Jersey last year, and there were countless people that would talk about, oh yeah, we, you know, we flew in from Atlanta for this. We, you know, we drove over the border from Canada. We came down here for this. It is, for some folks, a destination. It is a trip that they purposely make, that they want to make happen. And, you know, as you said, if we could, if it was possible, financially feasible and logistics feasible to be in every single city in America, I know you and your team would happily do that. It's just not. So I think it's interesting to hear, when we think about everything from the accommodations being accessible to just the availability of the space. So all very important things to think about. If we had somebody who's listening to this and they've never been to an Abilities Expo, they've pondered it, but never decided that, hey, I'm going to, you know, hop in my vehicle and travel the 45 minutes to an hour, or maybe we're going to book a vacation in that destination and swing by there. How would you convince somebody, like, why should somebody be attracted, somebody that has disabilities, be attracted to attending an Abilities Expo?
One of the big things we hear all the time is, when I come through the doors in my wheelchair, I see more people that look like me there than outside those doors. So there's an immediate identification with, wow, this is my community, and they're accepting me. Outside, I'm not accepted. People look down to me. They don't know how to approach me. They don't know how to say hello, whether they should stand, whether they should kneel down, whatever they need to do, because they don't understand somebody with a disability. A lot of times they'll shout because they think somebody who's in a wheelchair can't hear. We hear that all the time. But when you come to an Abilities Expo, you're there with peers. You're there with people who have disabilities that are more complex than yours, less complex than yours. But you also see that people with disabilities can do things that they can't do outside. For instance, we have the climbing wall, and anybody can get in the climbing wall. Even quads, we put them in a harness and they get up and they climb the wall, they ring the bell. That's an experience that they never thought they would be able to have. We have all sorts of sporting activities. We have wheelchair basketball, wheelchair football, wheelchair dancing, all of these things that you can do if you want to do, but you didn't even know they existed until you came to Abilities Expo. So Abilities Expo is a place that you can then redefine your life, because now you see that there are other people like you who are doing the things that you'd like to do. Mm-hmm. And that's why somebody should come to Abilities Expo.
I think that's awesome. I often hear when I do attend Abilities Expos, I remember this happened when I was in New York. It was the most recent one I went to. There were so many people that you could tell, like, they would come up to the booth. We'd be interacting about something related to a product, and somebody will walk by and tap them on the shoulder. Oh, hey, I'll be over there in a minute. Like, the people who were coming to the show, there were so many friends. It was like a mini reunion. One of the folks said to me, like, we love coming to this every year, because for some of us, we haven't seen this group of friends. Like, we always reconnect every year at the Abilities Expo. So connection is such an important thing for people, no matter if you have a disability or don't have a disability. I see caregivers who connect there. You'll see caregivers who will say to me, oh yeah, every time, you know, I bring my daughter to the Abilities Expo, one of her friends that's an Abilities Expo friend, we always go out and have dinner with the families just to catch up. You know, it's their reunion time. And the same thing with coming and working with some of these organizations. I think a lot of us who work these shows become friends, create networks professionally with other folks, because there is that common thread. Because you're right, even for those of us who do not have physical disabilities that participate in the show, it really is where someone who, you know, even therapists, this is something I tell local OTs and PTs, OT and PT schools, I'm, you know, always touting, send your folks to the Abilities Expos, because they're going to have a chance to understand what equipment is brand new that's out there. I can only speak for myself on this podcast, obviously, but back when I worked at the hospital in DC for 12 years, I took for granted how easy it was to catch a new product and service, because we were a relatively big hospital where the sales teams would want to come in and show us the new latest and greatest. But my friends who moved and worked in, say, a school system where they weren't central, they were bouncing around from school to school, they realized very quickly that their knowledge of what products were available, what features were available, had diminished because they weren't in one location. So a lot of the sales teams wouldn't come to them and sell to them, if that makes any sense. And so the Abilities Expo was where they could go and have their chance to have their hands-on time with all the things, as we like to say.
It's very interesting, because I had back surgery and I do physical therapy. And mm-hmm. I always say to my physical therapist, have you been to Abilities Expo? Mm-hmm. Well, no, they're stuck in their own little facility. So the equipment that they have is the equipment that they have in that facility. They don't really know what's available right outside of that. The other thing is, it's not only the OTs and the PTs, it's the professional caregivers, specifically doctors. Doctors don't have a clue what happens after they fix somebody. They don't know what kind of equipment this person is going to be using, what kind of products there are. They just fix something. So if somebody has a spinal cord injury, they go and they get it fixed by the doctor. The doctor has absolutely no idea what kind of catheters they're going to use afterwards, what kind of chairs they're going to have to need, whether they're going to be able to drive in their own van or not, whether they're going to be able to participate in any kind of activities. We'd love to get more doctors to come in and see what's available. My own personal physician comes every year, and he always tells me every doctor in LA should be at this show, but they're not. Mm-hmm. And we reach out to them, but they're too busy doing something else. So you're absolutely right. We want to get more therapists. We want to get more professional healthcare workers to be able to see what's available and to attend the workshops so that mm-hmm. they can learn. The absence of the professional healthcare worker, the therapists, doctors, nurses, is really a problem. And even though we reach out to them, we do a significant amount of marketing, public marketing, social media marketing, reaching specific targeted groups. You can lead a horse to water.
Indeed. But I think there are a lot of therapists out there that once they walk through those doors, they really look around like, wow, this has a significant amount of value for me just to be here to understand and to learn the equipment. But it's a matter of getting somebody over that hump to say, hey, come out here on a Saturday, can you leave work early on a Friday? That sort of vibe. With that said, you mentioned the workshops. What are some workshops that folks can expect and some topics they can expect this year when they come to an Abilities Expo?
We have all sorts of topics, ranging from how to pay for the products is a big one. How do I travel with a disability? I'm a parent with a child who just discovered has a disability. How do I deal with that? How do I find a service animal? When do I need a service animal? Mm-hmm. How do I make my house more accessible? So there's a series of different workshops, and they range. We do 12 to 15 workshops per show. And, and we get, obviously, experts in the field who talk about whatever their specific knowledge is on that topic.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. What about, as we talked about, also some of the nonprofits and the diagnosis-specific organizations, but what types of products? Like, I'm visualizing the Abilities Expos I've been to. I've seen everything from vans to RVs, obviously wheelchairs, mobility devices, but what are some other things that might be atypical that people wouldn't think about that they could potentially see in an Abilities Expo?
We have a guy who's from Fort Lauderdale. He came to our Fort Lauderdale show, and he has a board with different pegs. And the different pegs will allow you to use that board, and it's slip proof so that you can put it on a tray. You can put a cup on it. You can put a dish on it. He invented it in his garage. So something as simple as that, purpose built. Obviously, we have lots of different chairs, scooters, foldable scooters. We have catheters. We have an artist pavilion for people to come and buy from people who have disabilities. So there's just all of these interesting things and new products that you've never seen before. We have Mobius Mobility, which is a chair that climbs upstairs. We've got Manuvo, which is somebody who's got eyeglasses. And with the eyeglasses, if you're a quad, all you have to do is move your head left or right, up or down, and it moves your chair. Major, major technology. We've got a guy this year. He's actually from New Jersey, and he's coming out to LA. He came up with a covered wheelchair that can attach to either a power chair or a bicycle, so that if there's a kid who's got allergies, or if there's a kid who can't go out in the rain, this covered little carriage. And he sells it for $500. I mean, these are products that you never see anyplace.
So we've
got all of these different products, and sometimes we don't even know what that product is going to be. And I walk the floor, and I roll the floor in my scooter, and I say, my God, I've never seen that before. So you may come because you're looking for a van, but you're going to find 20 things that you didn't know existed, and you're going to say, I could use that, and I can use that, and I can use that.
That is very true. There's so many cool things that you've never seen or heard of or really thought of that are, that you say, wow, that's really innovative. That's extremely helpful. And it is life-changing for folks that come across that. What about folks who, you know, we talked about the cities that you're in, but what about folks who just cannot get physically to an Abilities Expo? Are there resources? I know you guys have a really good social media presence. Like, what would you say to somebody if they're like, Lou, I want to learn more information, but I physically just cannot get somewhere where you're having a show?
Yeah, we hear that a lot, Angie, and it's frustrating for us. We've talked about doing hybrid shows, doing virtual, but we can't get sponsors. The exhibitors want somebody to come and feel, touch, and see their products. When we were in the pandemic and we did three virtual shows, all we got was feedback that says, don't do this again. It's a problem. We'd like to have more information. You have to put the information out. Again, we need to caption. We need to do ASL. That all costs money. And unless we could even just break even, it's something we'd like to do. We have to figure out how we can do it to provide information to people. But in terms of products, like your product line, somebody has to sit in a chair. Somebody has to be measured for a chair. You can't just order it online and say, okay, it's going to be great. Because you have to know what the chair is going to do for you. You have to say, here are my needs. How are you going to solve my needs? In our particular community, it's very difficult to do virtually.
I would also encourage folks, even if they can't get there, to follow you guys on social media, to check out your website. You've got various blog posts, different news that pops up. That it really, Abilities Expo has become more than just the physical expo, from what I've seen, is that you guys have really in recent years embraced the digital marketing, but then also just the communication. And, you know, you've got folks that are relatable throughout the country that come to different shows and help out. You'll add a show, you'll do live videos for people who can't be there. So that's typically what I encourage. I'm from a smaller hometown in Central Virginia. There's no Abilities Expo that's close. And so I would, you know, tell people, check out the website. Even if you can't be there in person, Abilities Expo is a great group to be tied into, because maybe one day one will come close to you, but then there are just so many resources that you can learn from. I believe, I could be wrong, but most of the folks that come to Abilities Expo, you have those companies listed on your website. Right. So if someone can't get there, they can be like, oh, what is this? And click on it and get more information.
Exactly. We also have a monthly newsletter called The Buzz, and that's got five or six really interesting articles Some are product-based only because it's a new product. We're not doing advertorials. We don't sell that. It's just of interest to the people, to our database. And our database is pretty extensive. We have people who read the buzz from Australia, New Zealand, through Europe, China. Yeah, it's pretty extensive. So we try and get as much information out as we can. We stream at the show. So we have somebody who introduces the show. We stream at the show so people can stay involved. And as you say, follow us on Instagram, on any of the social medias, read the buzz newsletter, sign up for it. You'll get information. And then we have resources that you can find on the web.
So just so people are aware, because we're getting kind of close to time here, but just so people are aware, what cities will Abilities Expo be in 2024?
Okay, we're in Los Angeles in 3 weeks. We're in Metro New York, which is actually New Jersey. Edison, New Jersey, that's going to be the first week in May. Chicago, the last week in June. Houston, the first week in August. Phoenix, first week in September. Fort Lauderdale, middle of October. And Dallas, first week in December.
Packed schedule. That's pretty cool. Another thing that I want to touch on right before we end is who is on the Abilities Expo team? I know that you guys have had some changes. I know that some that you guys are getting to the point in your career where current owners were looking to retire and do something, move on to the next chapter, although I know this is a hard one for you guys to give up. So what can folks expect from the Abilities Expo in the future?
It's interesting because everybody thinks I'm the one to retire. David actually is going to step away. We've been recently purchased by a UK company, Raccoon Media. Raccoon Media, what they want is they want community-based shows that are for health and well-being. It's an established company. They do shows like running shows and skiing shows, outdoor shows. They do an allergy show. So they're community-based. We believe that with Raccoon, we're going to be able to expand Abilities Expo. We're going to Canada. We're talking about possibly doing a B2B, B2C show. So there's lots of things that we're looking at, which is going to expand not only our outreach, which is very important, but bringing in the community and reaching more for the community. That's really important. So more shows, you know, that depends on a whole bunch of things that we discussed before. Being able to go more digitally involved, that's something we believe Raccoon can bring to us. So we see Abilities taking it from here and going to the next level. David's going to step aside. I'm going to stay on for the transition. I'm going to be 86 this year. I'm not retiring. Our whole team stays with us except for Sarah, who did our content management, and she's decided to buy a farm in Ohio. So she's moving. She's going in a different direction in her career, and the content is now going to be provided by United Spinal Association. Okay. So they're going to take over providing content, workshops, and events. So we're really excited about that relationship, and we think that's going to add a significant amount to Abilities Expo.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, Lou, I'm going to ask you a tough question here. It's something we ask everybody on our podcast at some point, but why would you consider yourself a wheelchair nerd?
Well, I don't consider myself a wheelchair nerd. I consider myself an advocate, and I've learned a lot about wheelchairs in the past 15 years. And when we first took over the show, we used to look at people in wheelchairs, and we don't see people in wheelchairs anymore. We just see people.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, indeed. Yeah, people always ask us about the wheelchair nerd name and title and whatnot. It has become something that actually on the therapist side of the world is something that when you specialize, when you become a therapist, there's so many different areas that you can specialize in, and a lot of folks were just like, I know more random facts about wheelchairs. And arguably, I know you might not identify as one, but you have really embraced the community of folks that utilize wheelchairs, prescribe and provide them. So you are, if you're not a wheelchair nerd, you're definitely a wheelchair adjacent. You're one of our advocates, and we definitely appreciate that. So well, thank you so much.
I have to tell you one story. When we were in Minneapolis, that was the first show that we did because the previous company did a show in Minneapolis. And they told us they had 13,000 attendees. When we got there, it was sort of like DC. We had about 12 attendees. Anyway, we met this woman, Kim, and she was a double amputee, both legs in a wheelchair. And the first thing we saw was that she went up an escalator holding on to the escalator. And I nearly freaked. And so she said, don't worry about it. If I didn't think I could do it, I wouldn't do it. The next show we had was Los Angeles, and we had a huge crowd coming into Los Angeles, and we didn't quite know how to control the crowd and how they were going to come up this single elevator in Los Angeles, totally inaccessible. So two or three started coming up in wheelchairs on the escalator, and the security guy at the top of the escalator is going, and I said, don't worry about it. if they didn't think they could do it, they wouldn't do it.
There you go.
So we learned a lot that way.
Awesome. I love it. All right. Well, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you in person. Right now, the only one on my schedule is New York, but you never know. I could pop up anywhere, but the Promobile team will definitely be representing big time out in California. So right. thank you so much.
And see if you can get McKay to come down to New York.
I'll work on her. I'll see what I can get from her.
Thanks, Angie. It's been lovely talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, though.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Permobil. Today's episode was brought to you by...
Permobil is excited to welcome PDG Mobility to the family. PDG Mobility was founded in Vancouver, Canada in 1995 with the mission to design and manufacture custom wheelchairs for users whose needs were not met by existing devices. The PDG Mobility family of manual tilt wheelchairs include pediatric, adult, and bariatric options for a variety of different users.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you'd give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobil.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.